Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam,
Canto 3,
Chapter 22, text number 16. Kama sabhuyan naradevate shaha. Kama sabhuyan naradevate shaha. Putriya samanaya vido pratitaha. Ka eva te tanayam nadriyeta. Swayaiva kankhya kshipatim eva shriyam. Kamaha,
desire.
Saha, that. Bhuyat, let it be fulfilled. Naradeva, O King, te, your. Ashyaha, this. Putriyaha, of the daughter. Samamnaya, Vidau, in the process of the Vedic scriptures, Pratitaha, recognized, Kaha, who, Eva, in fact, Te, your, Tanayam, daughter, Na Adriyeta, would not adore. Svaya, by her own. Eva, alone. Kantya, bodily luster. Kshipatim, excelling. Eva, as if. Shriyam, ornaments. Translation. Let your daughter's desire for marriage, which is recognized in the Vedic scriptures, be fulfilled. Who would not accept her hand? She's so beautiful that by her bodily luster alone, she excels the beauty of her ornaments. Please repeat. Let your daughter's desire for marriage, which is recognized in the Vedic scriptures, be fulfilled. Who would not accept her hand? She's so beautiful that by her bodily luster alone, she excels the beauty of her ornaments. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kardama Muni wanted to marry Devahuti in the recognized manner of marriage prescribed in the scriptures. As stated in the Vedic scriptures, the first class process is to call the bridegroom to the home of the bride and hand her to him in charity with a dowry of necessary ornaments, gold, furniture, and other household paraphernalia. This form of marriage is prevalent among higher class Hindus even today and is declared in the Shastras to confer great religious merit on the bride's father. To give a daughter in charity to a suitable son-in-law is considered to be one of the pious activities of a householder. There are 8 forms of marriage mentioned in the scripture Manusmriti, but only one process of marriage, Brahma, a Rajasika marriage, is now current. Other kinds of marriage, by love, by exchange of garlands, or by kidnapping the bride, are now forbidden in this age of Kali. Formerly, Kshatriyas would, at their pleasure, kidnap a princess from another royal house, and there would be a fight between the Kshatriya and the girl's family. Then, if the kidnapper was the winner, the girl would be offered to him for marriage. Even Krishna married Rukmini by that process, and some of his sons and grandsons also married by kidnapping. Krishna's grandsons kidnapped Duryodhana's daughter, which caused a fight between the Kuru and Yadu families. Afterward, an adjustment was made by the elderly members of the Kuru family. Such marriages were current in bygone ages, but at the present moment, they are impossible because the strict principles of Kshatriya life have practically been abolished. Since India has become dependent on foreign countries, the particular influences of her social orders have been lost. Now, according to the scriptures, everyone is a Sudra. The so-called Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas have forgotten their traditional activities. And in the absence of these activities, they are called Sudras. It is said in the scriptures, Kalo Sudra Sambhavaha. In the age of Kali, everyone will be like Sudras. The traditional social customs are not followed in this age, although formerly they were followed strictly. Gurave Gurachandraya Radhikaya Siddhalaya Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. So Kardama Muni, he told Swayambhuva Manu that, yes, your daughter, she's very, very qualified, and I would be very happy to marry her. And he mentions that she's so extremely beautiful. But prior to describing her beauty, he described Samanya Vidal. These words are very significant here. Prabhupada, in his sentence, he says, in the process of the Vedic scriptures, that she, indicating by this, that Devahuti had some religious purpose in approaching Kardama Muni, as Jayadvaita Maharaj was describing nicely a few days ago. Devahuti's purpose was to find a husband with good character. She understood the purpose of marriage. Now, in this regard, a question may arise in the mind of many readers of the Bhagavatam. We understand that Kardama Muni is a great liberated soul. So the question is, what is the necessity? What is the purpose of his entering into Grihastha Ashram? The same question was asked by Maharaj Parikshit to Sukadev Goswami in the first verse of the fifth canto when he was describing about Maharaj Priyabrata. Priyabrato bhagavata atmarama katam mune grihe ramata yanmulaha karma bhanda parabhavaha. He asked Sukadev Goswami, he said, you just said something about this Maharaj Priyabrata, and you mentioned that he's a great devotee and that he entered into Grihastha Ashram. He said, but we understand that this Grihastha Ashram, Grihe Ramate Yan Mula, this is the root cause of karma bandha, of bondage in this material world. So how is it that a Vaishnava would do like that? It doesn't make any sense. Then again, in the fourth verse of the same chapter, he says, Sangsayo, this is my doubt. Sangsayo yam mahan brahman daraghara sutadishu saktasya yat siddhirabhut krishne cha matir achyuta. Oh, my dear Brahman, Shukadev, this is my great doubt. I don't understand this thing. How is it possible for someone like Maharaj Priyabrata, who is so attached to his wife and children and home, to achieve the topmost perfection in Krishna consciousness? So this point is made many, many times in our Vedic literatures. In the Sanat Kumar Sanhita, it's described Sangsaro, Sangsara Sagaranato, Putra Mitra Griha Kulat, Goptaro Meyuvameva, Prapana Bhaya Banjano. They're praying to the Lord, you please break this terrible fear that I have. And what is this terrible fear? What is this terrible thing which is troubling me so much? It's my friends. Mitra. And Griha Kulat. My family life, which is binding me up in this material world. This family life is a great cause of bondage. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he's describe this very nicely in his song, Gopinath. And we can just sing one line from that if I can organize this.
Gopinatha mama nivedana suno ishaidu jana sada kamarata kichu nahi moraha gunaha.
He prays, O Gopinath, Mama Nividana Suno, you please hear my prayer. Vishayi Durjana, I'm a great materialistic person. I'm always bound up with material desires.
Gopinatha Porechi Maya Rafere Dhanadara Sutta Gire che amare kame tere ke che jere Gopinatha Gopinatha.
Says, my dear Gopinath, poreche mayara fere, I've fallen into the perils of material illusion. Dana dhara suta girechi amare. Wife, wealth, and sons have surrounded me. Kameti rekechi jere. And lust has wasted me away. So, this is a very interesting question. How is it that we're glorifying Kardama Muni in this way? That he's such a great personality. But just see, he's going and he's saying all kinds of flattering words to Swayambhuva Manu about his daughter. Hey, she looks really beautiful and I'd like to marry her. Mm-hmm. We may think like that. But there are two considerations. There's aparavichar, or the apparent consideration. And there's tattavichar, or the absolute consideration. By the apparent consideration, it might seem that Kardama Muni is an ordinary lusty fellow. But we should be very, very careful. It's described that Vaishnava Chiniti Nai Devira Shakati. Even the demigods, they can't understand. They can't see the glories of a Vaishnava. Contemplate on that for a moment. Can we imagine for a second what the perception of an ant is in this room and what he thinks of us? Well, there's a bunch of moving mountains and maybe they're like God and sometimes they drop a little piece of sugar, there's some prasadam for me, and they can't really understand anything about us. But the perception of that ant's senses and our perception, although they're so greatly different, if we were to compare that to our sense perception and the sense perception of the demigods, the sense perception of the demigods is millions and millions of times greater than ours as compared to ours in comparison to the ant. For example, Vayu can perceive wherever there's air, and Agni can perceive wherever there's fire. But they can't understand who's a Vaishnav. They can't see who's a Vaishnav. Well, they're so learned in the Vedas, and they've seen, so they've been with so many devotees, but still, Vaishnava Chiniti Nai Devara Shakati. So this is an important point in trying to understand Maharaj Kardama Muni. Sri Rag Prabhu gave a very nice class yesterday. He was citing one verse from the 10th canto, chapter 14, of Lord Brahma's prayers. He tells Krishna, Tavad Ragadayastenas, Tavad Grihan, Karagriham Griham, Tavan Mohanagri Nidgyado, Yavat Krishna Tejanaha. He says, my dear Krishna, as long as people are not your devotees, then their desires are thieves. Their homes are prisons. Kara griham. Their love for others is a pair of shackles binding their feet. So, in his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada hasn't given anything. We have a BBT purport. But in fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained this verse very nicely also. And Jiva Goswami cites this in Priti Sandarbha. And a number of our acharyas have given comments on this verse. It's an important shloka. Vishwanath describes that Krishna may protest when he hears Brahma's prayers. He said, look, Brahma, if you speak like this, that my grihasa devotees in Braj, they're not bound up, then the sannyasis, when they hear that, they'll object. They'll say, no, this is not true. We know that all householders, they're bound up by the ropes of illusion. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in order to clarify this possible objection from the Lord, Brahma speaks this verse, and he says, yes, that's true for most materialistic grihasthas. However, what to speak of the householders of Braj, even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to these sannyasi critics. This is a very interesting point. Even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to the sannyasi critics. Attachment, hatred, and other material emotions are thieves because they steal the treasure of pure bliss from the soul. The rebellious souls are bound by their karma, placed in the prison cell of household life and tied with foot shackles to a host of illusion. O Krishna, as long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position. However, when they become your devotees, they develop attachment to bhakti and aversion to things obstructing bhakti. And then they repose all their love in you. In this way, the thieves of material attraction, hatred and love become sanctified by becoming fixed in you. And then help the devotee by giving him spiritual bliss, knowledge, and a host of advantages. Thus, the same home that was formerly a prison cell, created by favorable and unfavorable karmic reactions, becomes for your devotee a place filled with service to you through the hearing and chanting of your glories and the performing of a host of other activities meant to please you. These activities carry one to your eternal abode. In this way, when a devotee awakens his affection for you, the bewilderment caused by objects such as his wife and sons becomes a cause for expressing his love for you. How can householders like this be compared to ordinary sannyasis? He's saying that these such householders, they're far greater than ordinary sannyasis. Sometimes we have some confusion because our acharyas, particularly beginning with Thakur Bhaktivinoda, have advocated that as long as someone is anartha yukta vasta, as long as they have material desires, then they have to act according to the system of varna and ashram. But we become a little bewildered sometimes because our process of following vanashram is not the same as the process of vanashram followed by the non-devotees. And we become sometimes a little bewildered understanding the two. Our acharyas have described there's two types of vanashram. Asura vanashram or demoniac vanashram. That system of varna and ashram wherein service and devotion to the Lord is not the ultimate goal. And the other type of vanashram, which is recommended by our acharyas, is daivi vanashram. And Thakur Bhaktivinoda says that for a Vaishnav, if he or she has material desires, they must act, they must follow the rules and regulations of varna and ashram. He says, if they disregard those rules and regulations, thinking, oh, I'm a very advanced devotee, and I'm interested in Raghunuga Bhakti. Why I'll follow all these things. Then Bhaktivinoda says that person is a shameless person and we don't want to see his face. He says, however, as we're progressing on the path, we have to be giving up the rules and regulations of Vanashram for something higher. He says, if we don't do that, then we're guilty of niyamagraha, or too much attachment to the rules and regulations. Our goal is bhakti. Our goal is not perfection in the Vanashram system. Our goal is not Satyalok. We're not the International Society for Celibacy Consciousness. We're here to become Krishna conscious. Anyabhilashita shunyam. All other material desires should be shunya. And jnana karmadi anabritam. Bhakti shouldn't be covered by karma or jnana. This is the 11th verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. This is Uttam Bhakti. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary in this verse, raises an interesting question. Why is it that Rupa Goswami has chosen to use the word sunyata in regards to anyabhilas, meaning no anyabhilas, but he says anabritam, meaning not covered, when he speaks about karma and gyan? He says that some types of gyan are useful. He says there's three types of gyan: tat padartha gyan, tvam padartha gyan, and jiva brahma aikya gyan. Knowledge of ourself as a spirit soul, knowledge of the Lord, and knowledge of the oneness of the jiva and the Lord. The last, he says, is detrimental to bhakti. But the first two may be beneficial in the beginning stages of our bhakti, as well as karma, and he says adi. Beginning with, Jiva Goswami says, this means Vanashram. This means Vairagya. So why is he used the word anabritam, not covered? Why not karma, jnana, adi, shunyatam? No karma, no jnana. Bhakti is not dependent on karma or jnana or Vairagya or Vanashram. If we think that bhakti is dependent on these things, then we're doing aparad. Dharma bratta tyaga hutari sarva subha kriya samyam api pramadaha. This is the eighth offense to the holy name. To think that the holy name is equal or dependent upon some mundane religious activity, such as vanashram dharma. So why anadritam? Why uncovered? Jiva Goswami says there's two ways the karma, jnana, vairagya, vanashram, and these other things may cover bhakti. The first way is that one may think, oh, if I don't do all these mudras and mantras and follow these rules and regulations, then I may go to hell. They're not taking shelter of bhakti. Krishna says, sarva dharma parityagya. He doesn't say, sarva papa parityagya. He says, give up dharma and depend on me. And aham tam sarva papi bhyo moksa yishami ma suchaha. I'll take care of your pop, but just depend on me. We're not worried about pop. So if someone follows vanashram dharma or follows karma again, thinking that if I don't do this, then I'll go to hell, that's covering bhakti and that's an aparad. The second way, Jiva Goswami says, that bhakti may be covered by these things, is that one may think, oh, bhakti is my goal. But I need to do these things. I need to do these things, otherwise I can't get bhakti. So that's also covering the glories of bhakti. In the first canto of the Bhagavatam is described, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Jnanayat Yashivairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahoitukam. These things come from bhakti. This is not our goal. And bhakti is not dependent on them. Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Bhaktya Sanjayate Bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Bhakti is swarat. Bhakti is independent. Bhakti is not dependent upon vanashram. Bhakti is not dependent upon being a brahmachari, being a grihastha, being a vanaprastha, being a sannyasi. Those things are all external. Gyane prayasam hudapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmutaritam abadiyavartam stane stita shutigatam danuvan manobir ye prayaso ajita jito pasitres trilokyam. We should give up gyan. Our whole life, jivanti satmukaritam bhavadiyavartam, is hearing bhavadiyavartam, the topics of Krishna from the satmuk, the lotus mouths of those pure devotees. And then what do we do after we've heard that? We run away to some other personality, some other group? No. Stanistita shutigitam, shutigitam tanuvan manobir. You stay where you're at. And with your body, mind, and words, tanuvan manobir, you worship that. Prabhupada quoted this verse many times. He says, stanistita, stay where you're at. It doesn't matter if you're a grihastha. It doesn't matter if you're a brahmachari. It doesn't matter if you're a vanaprastha. Be in the situation that's the best for you to be in. Our goal is not to be sannyasis. Our goal is not to be vairagis. Our goal is to get Krishna bhakti. And stanistita shuti gatam tanuvan manobir. Whatever situation is best for that, we accept. Those sannyasis who are hearing this katha of Lord Brahma to Krishna, they may protest. How can you say that these brijbasi grihasas are greater than the sannyasis? And Lord Brahma says, no, necessarily they are. Because bhakti is not dependent upon these things. We have to understand this. And we have to understand what is the purpose of grihastha ashram. What is the purpose of these different ashrams? This is a very, very huge subject. I'd like to read to you some excerpts from an article written by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Actually, it's from we're getting ready to make a book. This will be an introduction for that book about grihastha ashram. This is an article that he wrote on the purpose of grihastha ashram. The society is the household of God. If anyone needs to leave, you please do. I'm going to continue for a little bit longer. We won't mind if someone has to go. But Godhead is the only master. He's made offerings of food, clothing, all necessities and luxuries, and every form of service. Wealth is earned from meeting expenses of his household. All persons are servants in the household of Godhead. The cardinal principle of the Vanashram Association is this, that no one may be the owner of any property or owner of the service of another. No one is the owner of any property, nor are they the owner of any service of another. Everyone is a servant whose activities are ever in the service of God. Similarly, the sole object of everyone's service is the only master, the only friend, the only son, and only consort is Krishna. Marrying and giving in marriage do not give rise to any rights of a master, either to the husband or to the wife. This is our Vaishnav system. Because in a Vaishnav system, the husband and wife are married not for sense enjoyment, but they're married for the purpose of advancement. And therefore, it's grihastha ashram. And if it's not done for that purpose, then it's not an ashram. Therefore, Krishna, in 11th canto Bhagavatam, he says, evam vivahaya prajaya naratya. Marriage is meant for procreating Krishna conscious children, not for sexual enjoyment. Krishna says the same thing in the Gita, dhamavirudha bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. That such sex life is none different from me. It's religious. If that sex life is for Krishna's pleasure, for Krishna's purpose. The Smriti Shastra describes, samaptakamaha dharmaha abhirudaha swapatyam putraha patimatra hetuhu. The only purpose of sex life is to beget Krishna-conscious children. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur goes on. Man and woman are joined in wedlock for the purpose of serving each other in the performance of the joint service of Krishna. Because they see each other as Vaishnavas. Our revered spiritual master is very fond of telling an anecdote from the life of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who had a number of followers. And on one occasion, one of his followers, he hadn't seen him for some time, and he returned with a young bride. He said, "Oh, Babaji Maharaj, I've gotten married to a very, very nice Vaishnavi lady. It's not a mundane thing. Please don't be angry with me." And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji told him, "Oh, very good. Very good. You've married a Vaishnavi." Now, he told him, "Now every day, I have an instruction for you. When you get up in the morning, you should offer your obeisances to her. And you should eat the remnants of her food every day. Because she's a Vaishnavi. This is Vaishnava marriage. Vaishnavas don't see each other as the body. Even a learned person, Vidyavanaya Sampani, Brahmani Gavi Hasini, Suni Chaiva Swapakicha, Pandita Samadarshan, even ordinary pundit isn't supposed to see like that. And what to speak of Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, someone who's on the Brahman platform, what to speak of a Vaishnava? We don't see this person as a male or as a female, but there's certain roles that we follow, as the devotees have been speaking nicely about. But we accept those roles in society for the purpose of teaching others and perhaps for the purpose of also helping ourselves. So we don't try to imitate those Paramahansa Vaishnavas who are beyond the rules and regulations. But the purpose is for service. And to see that other person as a servant of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati goes on. "The wife is not an object of enjoyment of the husband, nor vice versa. They do not marry for gratifying their sexual appetites. They marry for pleasing the Lord, not for pleasing themselves. They choose for their partners only such persons who they see serving God better than themselves." This is a qualification of a wife. Someone should see, "Oh, I want to find someone who's a better servant of Krishna than me." And the lady should also similarly think, "I want to find a husband who serves Krishna better than me." This is Vaishnava marriage. "They offer themselves to be accepted by their partners for the favor of being allowed to share in their superior service of Lord Hari. Neither the husband nor the wife should claim the services of his or her partner on their own account." This is a very strong statement, especially in India. "Neither the husband nor the wife should claim the services of his or her partner on their own account." If we do like that, how are we Vaishnav? A Vaishnav doesn't accept services from other persons, but he may accept them for his own service, for his service to Krishna, but not for his own personal service. "Both of them are meant only to offer their services if and when their partner is pleased to permit them to share their service of Lord Hari. None of them can force their partners to serve them." This is Vaishnava marriage. And he says many, many wonderful things. "The reason why the guru does not ordinarily ask any person to enter the state of wedlock," normally the guru doesn't ask his disciples to get married, "is that it is very rare to find anyone in this world who is willing to regard his or her wife or husband as worthy of his or her unconditional services." According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, we're not being asked to get married because we're not qualified. Because the qualification is that we have to give, or the man has to give his unconditional service to his wife to help her to become Krishna conscious and to help her to assist her in the service that she's doing for Krishna. And the wife is not qualified because she's not ready to offer unconditional service to her Vaishnava husband to help him in his services to Krishna because we're selfish. "This is, however, exactly the relationship between husband and wife that can alone be sanctified. by the Guru. This is our purpose, and therefore in our wedding mantras, in performance of Laja and Aja Homa, there's mantras, Edatam na Hari Bhakti Swaha. We're offering oblations at the time of the marriage ceremony. This is our purpose. May our devotion to Lord Hari flourish. At the time of the Panigrahana, when the husband takes the hand of the wife, he recites, Om Grinami Te Sovagavyam Hastam Maya Patya Jara Dasti Yata Asaha Sanaka Sanatana Sanandana Sanat Kumara Mayam Tvadu Krishna Garya Pratyaya. I'm accepting you for good fortune. I'm taking your hand because you're a Vaishnavi. I'm praying that you may attain old age in the company of your husband. The four Kumaras have given you to me for the performance of household duties as a devotee of Krishna. That's our purpose, to serve Krishna. That's the only purpose for the devotees. That's Kardama Muni's only purpose in accepting Devahuti. And if we think that Kardama Muni's in Maya, that Kardama Muni's something on a lesser platform than someone who's renounced, we're making an aparad. We're making a very, very grave mistake. So this consciousness has to be there. We respect persons on the basis of bhakti, not on the basis of the color of cloth that they wear, the type of costume that they're wearing. Thakur Bhaktivinoda is described in Sajjana Toshini. Renunciate Vaishnavas should not think that they are more respectable than the Grihastha Vaishnavas. One should know that the difference in respect among the Vaishnavas lies only between Uttama Adhikari and Madhyama Adhikari. Both the Uttama Adhikaris and Madhyama Adhikaris are found amongst the Grihasthas. This also applies to the renunciate Vaishnavas. In another place in Sajjana Toshin, he says, one who has devotion is a Vaishnav. Whether he or she is a Grihastha, sannyasi, rich, poor, learned, foolish, weak, or strong. For a devotee to remain a householder, to become a sannyasi, he said, is the same thing. For a devotee to become a grihastha or a sannyasi is the same thing. Naham vipro na charanadapaiti naipi vaisho nasudo naham varni na trigaha patir naovanastu yatirva kintu pro janakila paramananda pranabhitabdir gopi bartahu padakamala yodasa dasa dasaha. We give up all upadis, sarvupadi vinir muktam. We don't consider ourselves as grihasthas, vanaprastha, whatever. Stani stita shuddhi gatam dhanuvan manobir. We simply stay wherever we're at, whatever is the best situation for attaining bhakti. It's not a costume contest. Our purpose is to get Krishna bhakti. And we can do that anywhere. But we should do that in the right situation. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter, 2nd of November 1969. Generally, if one can remain a brahmachari, it's very convenient. And from brahmachari, one can take sannyas. But in this age of Kali, Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends that it is better to cultivate Krishna consciousness as a householder. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, that's the preferred ashram in this age of Kali. Why is it preferred? Because our only goal is bhakti. And in that situation, it's very nice. Don't mind me, Maharaj. Let me say this thing. Please forgive me. If we're a sannyasi, I think that Maharaj is not troubled by these things. We shouldn't think that. If we're a sannyasi, what happens? Everyone is coming and offering obeisances. Oh, Maharaj, please accept some Mahaprasad. Please accept our respects. I can't digest it. But if your grihasa is very nice, everyone comes and spits on you. Very nasty. Grihastha. That's bhakti anukul. That's very good. Yes, very, very nice. Thank you very much. I like that. We should accept in that mood. And we should accept in the mood that Kardama Muni is accepting. For the purpose of Krishna consciousness. As a responsibility for serving the partner as a Vaishnava. Which means that we see them as superior to ourselves. We see all Vaishnavas as superior to ourselves. So we also should see our husband or our wife as superior to ourselves. And we should take care of them. Srila Prabhupada has written a letter in 1972. If you've taken a wife for grihastha life, why are you neglecting her? That's not Vaishnav. Vaishnav means one who is very responsible. And if he's a householder, then he must be responsible. I cannot give sannyas to any devotee who's not proved himself to be responsible in all respects. Better you prove yourself first by being an ideal householder and forget all this nonsense. You'll be surprised to hear another letter Prabhupada wrote in 1971. Prabhupada wrote, he said, forget taking sannyas for the time being. Unless your child is born, there's no question of taking sannyas. His wife was pregnant with this devotee who was writing. Probably she was complaining. She was very miserable. And he's thinking, what is this? I don't have to listen to this nonsense, you know. I have several friends who took sannyas, and I can do the same thing. So he wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I'd like to take sannyas. Is that okay? Prabhupada wrote back, your wife is pregnant right now. It's not such a good idea. Prabhupada said, we shall consider the matter further when your child is born. Now you should take care of your wife. The women should be cared for, especially during pregnancy. At the time of the marriage ceremony, there's a promise that the husband will care for the wife throughout her life, and the woman will serve the husband throughout his life. When the child is grown up, then the husband can take sannyas. Prabhupada was dealing with such persons. We should know what Smriti Shastra has to say about these things. It's a very, very grave responsibility for a husband to take care of a wife. Lord Narayan is described, Vihaya swa kalatrancha yogrinati parastriyam lobhat kama sukadvapi so dhamana atra sangshaya. Any man who leaves his own wife out of greed or lust, and accepts another wife, is undoubtedly degraded. Patayitva sacha patid dasapurvam dasaparan chakvasva swaminamya cha param gacchati kamata. Along with his previous 10 and future 10 generations of family members, he'll go to hell for leaving his devoted wife. Similarly, if a woman, due to lust, accepts a man, giving up her own husband, she also gets the same result. So this is Vedic culture. Vedic culture has a different understanding of women. It's very, very difficult for us to understand because we come from a Western culture where ladies are goddesses and all the men throw themselves at their feet and worship them for their favors. But in this culture, ladies are also goddesses, but not goddesses to be exploited for sex, but they're goddesses because they're considered to be mothers. In this culture, we're devotees of our mothers. We're Matri Bhaktas. Krishna is a devotee of Mother Yashoda. When Krishna goes home at the end of the day after herding the cows, who does he go to first to offer obeisances? Not Nanda Maharaj. He first goes to Yashoda. Vedic culture is a culture that respects all ladies as mother and protects them so that those motherly energy can come out. Just as someone who's artistic won't be able to do his artistic functions, won't be able to perform properly if you put him in a manager position because the two energies don't work simultaneously. So a woman's naturally motherly shakti, that potency, won't come out if she's thrust into the business world, she's thrust into some unprotected position. A mother should be protected, and we should respect them. This is described in many places in our Vaishnava literatures. Brahmavivarta Purana is described. Matar ityeva sabdena yamcha sambhasate naraha samatri tulya satyena dharma sakshi satamapi. If you call someone Mataji, don't think it's a bad word. Like calling someone nigger or something. Mataji is not synonymous for nigger. If you call someone Mataji, it's a title of great respect. And the Brahmavivarta Purana says, if you say that, then Dharma, Yamaraj, personified, he hears your statement. He's a witness. Sabadan, Baba. Be careful. Narada Pancharatra, chapter 2, text 6 to 7 describes. Ado samucharet radham paschat krishnam chamadavam viparitam yadipatet brahmahatyam labhid dhruvam. First we recite the name Radha, and then we utter the name Krishna or Madhav. If you do the reverse, you get the result of killing a Brahmin. Why? Shri Krishna jagatam tato jaganmata charadika pitu sad gunomata vandya puja gariyasi. Krishna is the father of the world, and Radharani is the mother. The mother is 100 times more worshipable and higher in point of respect due than the father. And the same thing, we don't want to quote so many verses, but the same thing is described in Mahabharata, the same thing is described in Naradiya Purana. If someone's interested, we printed these in one of our Bindu magazines before. I could give you the reference. But again and again it's said, the mother is more respectable, more due worthy respect than even the father. So in Vedic culture, that's the culture where we see everyone as mother. Sometimes some of the Gurukuli girls, they become a little annoyed. A six-year-old girl, you go to her and say, excuse me, Mataji. I'm not a Mataji. They don't like that. But you know, here in Bengal or in Orissa, if you go to a six-year-old girl and you tell her that, they like it. Because it's a different type of culture. They feel flattered by that. They feel respected by that. Because that's Vedic culture. All ladies are seen and respected as mother. Prabhupada, he used to quote Chanakya Pandit, Matrivat Paradarishu, that we should see all ladies as mother. And Prabhupada would sometimes say, except for the wife. But if we think about it, the conception of mother also applies even to wife. Because in a Vaishnava marriage, the purpose is to beget a Krishna conscious child. And the criterion that the man is looking for in a wife, he's looking for someone who will be a good mother. He's not looking for a good prostitute, like in the West, someone who's just physically beautiful. He's looking for a lady with good qualities, who's a good devotee. And so if he's thinking like that, automatically he respects her. We read back in the newspapers every day about prostitutes being murdered because no one respects prostitutes. They become very, very angry with them. But by nature, everyone loves their mother. If we are looking for a wife who's a good mother, naturally you have respect for her. So she's your mother because you're looking for someone who'll be a mother for your child. She's your mother again when she gives birth to your child because that child is considered to be your expansion. So now she's your mother. We should see her like that and respect and love her like that. Thirdly, she's your mother because she feeds you. She cleans up after you. Sometimes we say that women don't grow up past the age of 9. They never become more mature. Prabhupada would say things like that. But I think, honestly, that men also don't grow up much past the age of 9. And if you don't believe this, ask any wife about her husband. Ask my wife. Because men, they like to be mothered. They like someone to cook for them and take care of them. And ladies, they like to be fathered. They like someone who's going to protect them and care for them in the same way their father did, with respect and with love. This is our Vedic culture. So Mataji is not a bad word. It may be if we have a wrong understanding of it, but it's a very, very exalted title in Vedic culture. It's a title which is offered to that person who is worthy of the most respect. And that respect is a synonym of a Vaishnava. Amanina manadena. And it's the hallmark of a Vaishnava relationship, a marriage. And we see this in Kardama Muni. Yes, I'll accept Devahuti because she wants to be married for the purpose of a religious marriage. So, thank you very much. We'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki, Goprema Nandi Hari Hari Bo.